Okay, let's see. Again, our phone number is 713-390-5102. There are a lot of things in the news today, this week, as a matter of fact. I guess one of the biggest events has been the presidential debate. And, of course, you heard the Reverend Al Sharpton. He covered that topic somewhat. And, of course, a lot of you probably didn't get through. Perhaps you still got issues and questions. And I guess we might as well just start. I know we're going to get a general Capitol Hill update if we can. But I think some post-debate analysis would be fitting.
Well, thank you. Most people who saw the debate concluded, I believe, that if it's based upon facts, that the president was the clear winner of the debate. And usually debates do have some degree of credibility because of the facts that are accorded. As you know, one of the candidates was less factual than the other. And I say facts because I try not to get into intentionality. I don't want to get into whether or not one person was an insidious prevaricator. But I do want to say that the president was not one of those persons. And I would just add this about the debates. They have left us now with a plethora of information that we have to sift through. And after we do so, I think that you'll see a lot of messaging that will compare Romneys. And the question truly will become, which Romney are you supporting? Not Mitt Romney, but which Romney? Are you supporting the Romney that was for pro-life?
Before he was against it.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to get him get a handle on him. And I won't give the president any advice as to how he should conduct himself, but I sure would consider opening up the next debate with, I just want you to know, friends, I'm here tonight to debate whichever Romney is over there. Mr. Romney, whomever you are, I'm prepared to deal with whether you were for the auto bailout or whether you were against the auto bailout. I'm ready to deal with all of the issues that you have been on both sides of. A member of his party once stated, a dear friend, as a matter of fact, said that you can support him. Everybody can support him because he has taken all sides of every issue. Mm-hmm. So it's not difficult to support him if you wanted a person that's going to be wherever you would have him be on a given issue.
Yeah, someone said he's not pro-choice and no choice. He's multiple choice.
Yeah. Well, there's a good deal of credible evidence to substantiate what you're saying. The empirical evidence is there, and I think you'll see more of that as we get closer to the election.
But I think it's also important to point out that based on what I've read and heard, every incumbent president since they've been doing this thing on television has lost the first debate, or supposedly lost the first debate.
There are exceptions,
well,
of course,
Carter,
but
yeah.
Presidents tend to have a little bit more to do than prepare for debates.
Absolutely, and that's especially we just lost one of the Border Patrol agents. That was going on right at that point.
Conflict in Libya,
and who knows what's going on with the war on terror and so forth.
Yeah, all of these things are things that gets the attention of the president. So, given that he has a few other things to concentrate on, I can understand how the president may not have performed at the level that he would want to perform at. But I do say this, if you base your determination upon empirical evidence presented, facts presented, the president wins.
And, of course, we all got to also remember, too, that winning a debate does not necessarily translate into winning an election.
Absolutely. One debate does not an election make. You have to go through the several debates. This is a trilogy, and this is just the first part of the trilogy. But you still have, in the final analysis, to get people out to the polls.
Absolutely.
And that's what it's all about. You've got to get people out in these key states. Florida is one with 29 electoral votes. We've got to make sure that we have a good ground game, and I see that ground game coming into place. But we also have to have enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm.
And we should be enthusiastic about the things that this president has done. He has done so much for so many, and my hope is that we will allow that enthusiasm to take us to the polls. And if we do this, I'm confident the president can get reelected, but there has to be an enthusiastic base of support.
And let's go to line four and talk with Bernard. Bernard, you're on Sunday Morning Live with Congressman Al Green. Good morning.
How are you doing this morning?
I'm
brother?
Great. First question. Morning. I got a question for you first. You registered to vote?
Can't do it, brother. I wish I could.
Oh, were you calling from prison?
No, I'm out here. But
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. What's your question this morning? A little attempted humor there. Go ahead. What's your question this morning?
Bernard, may I ask you a question? I don't mean to intercede on your time, but if you could vote, the question is, would you, and would you encourage those who can to make sure that they vote?
Man, I'd break both my legs to vote if I
Thank
could.
Thank you, brother. Thank you for saying it. Thank you.
Okay.
Hey, here's the deal. I work at a firm here in Houston where we do political, medical, all types of surveys. And I speak to people nationwide about, the process of the voting and about the presidential election and so forth and so on. And I'm hearing a lot of stuff from a lot of these people that are actually Republicans, and they are turning against Romney. But as far as President Obama and how he conducted himself during the debate, this brother is very intelligent, and this brother is not going to come out and just show everything that he's got, which is the way that you do when you are dealing with an enemy that strictly sticks to nothing but the opposite of proper, we'll say, for sake of better term, war. But the brother doesn't need to come out and show all this that a lot of people are saying. Well, he lost the debate. He didn't lose anything. All he did was come out and let this man show one simple true fact. How do you know and learn how not to become a fool? You watch another fool in action, and he's going to teach you how not to be a fool. You see?
Well, so, I concur with this thought that the opposition, Mr. Romney, is quite adept at shifting his positions.
Yes.
He does it as well as anybody I have ever seen in all of my years of viewing politics. And I think that that is going to be the thing that's going to cause him to get hoisted by his petard, if you will, because he can't get away from it now. He's just said too many things too many times such that we have a record. And the president has a record, and I want the president to just run on his record.
But that's all you got to do. You don't have to, he doesn't have to come out and show what, you know, the other side is trying to say he should show. He just has to come out and be just who he started out to be. The whole country, even those who are against him, knows this man is in place to do for everyone. You know, when they talk about the middle class all the time, and I have no problem with the middle class, but, you know, my issue is let's not just talk about the middle class, because you have those of us who are on the economic scale, the lower class. We go out and work every day, too. We carry this country on our backs, too, probably even more so than the middle class. So I would just like to see a little bit more said about those of us who are below the middle class line, who also go to work every day and support this country.
All right, Bernard.
Bernard, I agree with you. You have people who work full time and live below the poverty line. Right here in Houston, Texas, we just finished a fight with our janitors to try to get them a wage increase. They were making about $18,000 a year if they were working full time. The poverty level for them was about $22,000 a year. It takes about $47,000 a year to live in Houston, Texas. That's the cost of living. So when they work full time and live below the poverty line, there's something wrong. But now, getting beyond just those who are working at minimum wage level, you have plenty of people at the middle class level who have seen their incomes shrink, and it's because of what happened prior to this president's getting into office. We were losing 750,000 jobs a month when the president took office. Now the unemployment is at 7.8%. We have had 31 months of straight job growth, and this is a real improvement. The president is bringing us back. And if I may just share this with you quickly, and I will do it quickly, here's some of the things that this president has done. He passed the Affordable Care Act. He passed the stimulus, the $787 billion that has been used to make sure that this economy turns around and is stabilized. Passed Wall Street reform. Ended the war in Iraq, began the drawdown of the in the war in Afghanistan, eliminated Osama bin Laden, turned the U.S. auto industry around. I say that he saved the U.S. auto industry, recapitalized banks, repealed Don't Ask, Don't Tell, toppled the Gaddafi government, has had an opportunity to do many other things in foreign policy. But I would just point to this. He is committed to ending the wars. That means something to a lot of people in this country who have seen their children go to war and come back unlike they left. We have to take care of them. We cannot spend an unlimited amount of money on them while they are away and then decide when they get back that we have to balance the budget such that we can't spend enough on them. But this president is committed to ending the wars, and the wars have been draining this economy. Part of the reason why we're in the shape that we're in is because we were funding two wars with an unlimited coffer. You can't do that and maintain the kind of economy that we want to have for middle-class people.
It's 9:14, 14 past 9 o'clock. You're listening to Sunday Morning Live on Magic 102.1, Houston's R&B station. Let's go to line two and talk with Reginald. You're on Sunday Morning Live.
Yes, speaking on the Poor People's Campaign, you know, Dr. King talked about right before he left about divestment so that we could have some leverage to be able to take care of the poor. And Social Security and disability came to effect during Roosevelt time, and it has been only one time during that period that they did not, the poor people did not get a cost of living increase. And it's the poor people who you're asking to come out and vote for, you know, disabled, the widows and the orphans. And here it is, you haven't even mentioned in Congress about giving them a cost of living adjustment, that COLA.
So what's your question, Reginald?
I want to know, are they willing, the Congress, to deal with giving a cost of living adjustment to the senior citizen of disability?
The answer is an absolute yes. The answer is an absolute yes, and we have done it when Democrats had control of the House. We've done that. We've always fought for the cost of living for those who are on Social Security. And we've also fought to expand Medicaid. We have Medicaid dollars being offered to the state of Texas that the state of Texas is talking about rejecting. Not Democrats in the state of Texas, I might add, but the state of Texas political structure is talking about rejecting this money. So, yes, we have, and we continue to do so. And I thank you for the question because it needs to be said that we do.
Thank you, Reginald. Let's go to line three and talk with Mike, Texas Mike. You're on Sunday Morning Live on Magic 102.1.
The one and only Texas Mike. Quick comment and a quick question, sir.
Good morning, Mike.
And I hope President Obama wins.
Thank you.
But here's what I do know. 5 years from now, ladies and gentlemen, President Obama will no longer be president. There will still be unemployment, racism, and all the problems of the world. Who do we blame then, ladies and gentlemen? Well, don't put all your eggs in any man. Have a good day, sir.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
We'll blame whoever's in office at that time.
Well, what I'm going to continue to do is talk about some of the things that this president has done. I mentioned some earlier. Let me just mention the student loan program with the Pell grants having been expanded. This president made it possible for $36 billion to go into expanding this program for lower income students. He created the Race to the Top program so that we could have $4.35 billion, and this came from the $787 billion. This $4.35 billion for the Race to the Top, so that we could encourage school systems and schools to get their children to move in a positive direction. He also coordinated the international response to the financial crisis. The financial crisis was not something limited to the United States, but the United States has taken the lead on trying to eliminate it around the world.
Mm-hmm.
I would also add that he has increased the support for veterans. This is important. I mentioned it just a moment ago, but there was a new GI Bill passed under this administration, $7 to $8 billion in tuition assistance for our veterans over a decade. That means something to people who did not have the opportunity to get an education because they were out serving the country in some foreign place. So he's done a lot of great things. And again, I want him to just run on his record. I'll be highlighting that as we go through the program.
Okay, let's take a few more phone calls. Let's go to line one and talk with Don. You're on Sunday Morning Live with Congressman Al Green. Good morning.
Good morning. I wish the president would ask Mitt Romney one question. Where's the beef? Mm-hmm. And let me ask you a question about this situation when they said the president had the Democratic House. The House was Democratic and the Senate was Democratic. what role did the Blue Dog Democrats, their fiscal conservative, they lost the reason that the House is now Republican is because a lot of the so-called Blue Dog Democrats lost their seats to Tea Party-type Republicans. And so how is it that they're trying to say that the president had a Democratic House majority when most of them was disguised as they voted more with Republicans, the Blue Dog Democrats?
Thank you for the question. Most of the concerns emanate from the Senate, where you have minority rule. The Senate is an institution that functions with a minority rule, not majority rule. Here's why. If you have 41 votes in the Senate, you can prevent what's called cloture. Cloture means that you cannot close the debate on an issue so that you can use 51 votes to pass the bill. Literally, if you have a bill pending before the Senate that only requires 51 votes to pass, you must have 60 votes to stop debate on it so that you can now vote on it and pass it with 51 votes. That has been the problem. And that was a problem when we were dealing with the Affordable Care Act. The president truly wanted some things in that bill. The public option is one that we could not get because we didn't have enough senators to get to cloture. We had 51 who were for a public option, but when it came to getting to cloture, we had a few Democrats who were not supportive of it. And we have one person who caucuses with us from time to time who would not support it. So it's not as simple as it might seem when you have what appears to be 60 votes perhaps in the Senate and you only need 41 votes to stymie, stall, stop, thwart any efforts.
Thank you so much, Don, for your call. You know, how do we get to this 60-vote closure? When did that come into play?
Well, that's a rule that the Senate imposed upon itself because the Senate is considers itself a deliberative body. In the House, we tend to work very closely with our party, party line, generally speaking, and there's certain exceptions. But in the Senate, they see themselves as a party that deliberates and that takes their time to get things done.
But
so this rule was supposed to afford them the deliberation, meaning get to cloture before you vote.
Right.
Give them plenty of time to make sure everybody is heard on the deliberative part.
But it hasn't always been 60 votes.
Has not.
And
it doesn't have to be. They can change
it. To back to 50,
they can change it if they so choose. But there is a great amount of reluctance to change it because you never know when you're going to be in the minority. And as a result, when you're in the minority, you don't want the majority to have its way to your detriment. So that's the argument anyway.
Right. Which, again, helps the gridlock.
Yes, it does afford gridlock. There are many reasons for gridlock. If we want to get into that, I'll be honored to talk about it.
We'll have a couple more shows for that.
Well, one of the reasons for gridlock, quite frankly, is a lack of earmarks.
Mm-hmm.
Earmarks, for example, with a transportation bill, there would be something in there for Houston. Mm-hmm. We'd have our police, fire, our trains, our port, airports. And people in Houston, generally speaking, support things that benefit Houston.
Yes.
Well, now when you have a transportation bill, they've eliminated what are called earmarks. And some of them were bad. Bridges to Nowhere ought not exist, but there weren't a lot of them. So now when you have a transportation bill and you don't have all of the various congressional districts represented in it, you find people reluctant to support it.
Yeah, they're reading magazines.
Yeah, so earmarks really does. These earmarks make a difference in terms of our working together. Everybody in Congress is a big talker. So if you think that you're going to convince your colleagues because you can out-talk them, you're probably going to be greatly disappointed because they are all sent to Congress because people think they can leverage their voices.
I guess the earmarks is a synonym for pork, right? Yeah.
Well, some people say you're dealing in pork. Others say you're bringing home the bacon.
Okay. Pork?
You know, I like bringing home the bacon.
Absolutely.
We've brought billions of dollars into the city, and I'm proud of it. Working with my colleagues, of course, didn't do it individually, but we've done it together.
All right. 9:28, 28 past 9 o'clock. Let's go to line 3 with Trina. You're on Sunday Morning Live with Congressman Al Green. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Trina.
Yes. Good morning. I'm a little nervous, but...
It's okay. Let me hold your hand. Just put your hand on the radio. You can be okay.
Okay. But I was just laid on my heart. I got up this morning, and I was thinking, you know, how can I get out and delegate these people to get registered to vote? So I got with a couple of friends of mine last night, and I want to get together at the McDonald's on the I-10 freeway off of Lockwood, East Freeway. And I'm trying to get some people out with me to get the people registered to vote for tomorrow. Tomorrow is the last day to get registered. And I'm trying to get
people. Well, it's that after tomorrow, the 9th.
Yes, the 9th.
Yeah, that's Wednesday.
Okay, well, tomorrow is a holiday that I know of.
Yeah, Tuesday, the 9th. I'm sorry, I don't want to mislead anybody. Go ahead, Trina, I'm sorry.
Okay, well, I was really trying to get some people out, to see if they, would like to come participate with me to get these people out. Register to vote.
Well, I think that's a great idea. Obviously, you can call all your personal friends. If you go on Facebook, your Facebook friends. If you got a Twitter account.
I have it already, and I also decided to call the radio station, too, to, some of the people that's not on Facebook, to get in order to delegate this. So.
Okay, all Trina's friends, go over to McDonald's and get registered to vote.
Off of the I-10 freeway, east of Lockwood.
All right. And thank you, Trina. We appreciate
thank you
being
very much,
part
Trina.
Of the program.
And friends, you can become a registrar if you would like to. And, of course, you'll have to go to the clerk's office to get yourself deputized so that you can actually do the registering yourself of people to vote. The registration process is not that difficult. And I applaud you for your desire to get involved in this process. It's a process that we have to get involved in by voting, but also encouraging people to vote. And we have to do so because the election is going to take place whether we vote or not. Better that it take place and we have someone in office who's going to support the issues that are of concern to us than not. Social Security is on the ballot. It is there. While I have been in Congress, I saw the legislation to privatize Social Security come before Congress. Medicare is on the ballot. There are people who want to take Medicare to another place. They want to voucherize it. You'll have voucher care. They want to minimize Medicaid. These things are on the ballot. And rest assured, minimum wage is on the ballot. There are people in Congress who do not believe there should be a minimum wage law. Work at the mercy of the person that employs you. No national standard. Standard is whatever the person that you're working with wants to pay you. So these are the things on the ballot. But as important as they are, the Supreme Court is on the ballot. Dr. Jay and I were just talking about this. We have four justices that are over 70 years of age. Ginsburg is about 79, as I understand it. And if the next president appoints one or two Supreme Court justices, it can change the direction of the country for the rest of our lives. We could lose the Voting Rights Act. It is on the ballot because the next president may appoint one, two, or three, possibly four Supreme Court justices. And if this happens, I assure you, if it goes in a very conservative direction, the Voting Rights Act will be at risk. It's at risk right now, but it'll be at great risk.
And, of course, you got women's issues that are out there. There are just so many, many important topics. And, you got to be involved because everything is going to affect you. So you may as well be a part of deciding what your future is going to be like. Let's go back to the telephone. Brother Chris, you're on Sunday Morning Live, line two. Good morning, Brother Chris. Welcome to Sunday Morning Live on Magic 102.5.
Good morning.
Good morning, Brother Chris.
I am a registered voter. I'm also encouraging others to vote. I'm on your
good
battle.
You. Thank you.
I also want to point out one thing. The president's record speaks for itself. He
exactly.
don't have to debate against anybody. The president is not his to win because he's already the president. He is to lose. And we must be careful about one thing as well, Congressman Green. We must also send those candidates to office who's going to be working with the president and not against him. We've got other congressmen and senators. We must also elect those candidates who's going to work with the president to
absolutely.
Help this country moving forward. And you say it's something that's extremely important. I heard Mitt Romney say the night he wanted to give the power back to the state. The power back to the state. That's Jim Crow ways.
Yeah, so states' rights have never been good for us. States' rights were states' wrongs in many cases as it relates to us. And you're right about the president's record. Just to cite a few more things. He eliminated that pay equity concern that was that emanates from the Lilly Ledbetter case. It was Lilly Ledbetter versus Goodyear, wherein she was being paid less than other persons that she was working with who were doing the same work. And there was a law that said she had 180 days from the date she actually was first discriminated against to bring her claim. Well, that has been changed under this president's leadership. I would add that food safety has improved under his leadership. He has appointed two justices to the Supreme Court, both of whom were females. No other president has done this. His record is outstanding. It is superior.
Exactly. One other thing I would like to say as well, you know, the president can continue to be our president and win if we all get out and go vote for him. Also, vote for Attorney Vivian King for district judge 177 while we voted. Attorney Vivian King. You
okay.
Got to work, Reverend Al. I'm sorry, Congressman.
Yeah, Reverend Al was on just ahead of me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brother Chris.
Let me just mention, since you mentioned the judiciary, he passed the Fair Sentencing Act. And I think that's important to note that the difference between crack cocaine versus powdered cocaine has been addressed under this president's leadership. We have been trying to do that for decades and could not get it done. This president has gotten it done, as is the case with health care, bringing so many more persons under the auspices of health care in a physician's office as opposed to at an emergency room. He has done well, and we would do ourselves proud if we would go to the polls and vote.
Congressman Al Green, 9th District of Texas. I'd like to thank you once again for being a part of the program and educating our listeners to the importance of getting out there and exercising their rights.
Well, I plan to see you at the event with the owner. She's a lady that have great admiration
for.
Well, as a good person, I have a lot of respect for her. She's done a lot of great things, and I really look forward to seeing her again.
Yeah, in fact, she'll be here all next week. Well, a few days next week, so we're gonna have a good time.
Great,
making a claim. And we'll tell her you expressed your appreciation for it.
I absolutely do. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, sir.